We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at WIXR.org.
And jumping on the trains. Hey, rabbit. Can that train take me home too? 'Cause I know I need to. And I can't see how I got so lost. That river full of rain, watched its shadow box its banks, and I missed my boat. Hey rabbit, can you read the stars?
WYXR 91.7 FM, station with the city soul that's raised by sound. Happy Tuesday morning, 11:01, almost 11:02. I was gonna try to wait it. There we go, 11:02. Here at the University of Memphis Hour. My name is Jared J.B. Boyd, and excited. I'm super, super pumped to talk to you a little bit about something new that's going on at the campus we all love. Our founding partner, the University of Memphis. Got Tyler here. Tyler, how you doing?
Doing all right. Thank you for having me.
I always love to let my guests, particularly on this show, introduce themselves. So why don't you let everyone know who you are and what we're talking about today.
For sure. Hi, my name is Tyler Morris. I'm a second year MFA directing candidate in theater directing at the University of Memphis. I am the director of the upcoming production, The Mousetrap, and very big into fighting video games, particularly Tekken and Virtua Fighter series. So. Fun facts.
Awesome. Fantastic. Are you from Memphis originally?
No, sir. I was born and raised in West Virginia for all of my life up until grad school here at U of M, which started almost 2 years ago now, a year and a half. Started, I believe it was fall 2023.
What jumped out at you about the University of Memphis that made you want to continue your studies here?
Well, I had a professor at my undergrad at West Virginia University. She had she has a friend and a colleague in the theater department down here. They both went to Columbia University up in New York for their graduate studies. And whenever I was looking at applying to grad programs, my professor at WVU, Irene Albee, she was like, "Hey, I have this friend down at University of Memphis, Holly Durr. You know, she's really great, and I think you should reach out to her and try to get in contact with them and the people down there." And it was just kind of one of those deals where you're applying to so many different programs at once. You kind of almost, not like a blur necessarily, but it's always trying to go like one after the other and trying to keep track of all of it, and kind of becomes a little bit hazy. But Memphis stood out in a lot of ways because I was able to have really good conversations with my two advisors and the two directing faculty at the university, John York and Holly Durr, and they were just very welcoming and inviting people. And they both have tremendous, tremendous knowledge and skills when it comes to theater, and different perspectives as well. So it's like you get a very full education from the both of them. It's not just one person repeating the same thing the other person just said. You get two varying perspectives, but both coming from a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience, and a lot of skills. So that is the people at the university is what drew me to it, and it's what's keeping me sticking around for the whole time as well.
Fantastic. For those who are at home who are listening who maybe know nothing about theater as a consumer or as a practitioner. Could you sort of give a bit of an overview, a quick insight into what the life of a director at this stage of your career, what it's like?
It's hectic, for one, especially whenever you're trying to balance grad school studies on top of directing a production. It's a lot of long days and even longer nights in the theater. Like this past week, we've been in our tech rehearsal process, and those are our longest days. We have been in the theater from 10 a.m. on Saturday to 8 p.m. Saturday night, and then doing it again Sunday from 10 to 8, and classes in the morning on Mondays, graduate assistantship hours 1 to 5 every weekday, and then rehearsal again from 6:30 to 11 o'clock at night during the weekdays leading up to show. So it's a lot of hours, but you really quickly, it's a blessing being able to do theater in university, because I feel like it's one of the programs that actually gives you a lot of hands-on experience for what you're going to be doing in real life. Like, once you graduate, you're going to be in the business, in the profession, doing more or less the same process you've been exposed to in university. So it's a lot of collaboration, it's a lot of listening and working with others, and trying to unify everyone together to work towards a common goal of producing good art and a good production.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tell me about this particular production, The Mousetrap.
Yeah, this is a murder mystery written by Agatha Christie, the best-selling fiction author of all time. She wrote what initially started off as a radio drama, and then it evolved into a stage play, which has been continuously produced in the West End on London since 1952, making it the longest running continuous theatrical production in the world. The only time they ever took a break since 1952 was whenever COVID hit and shut down all the theaters. But then once they got the COVID restrictions got lifted, they jumped right back into it like nothing ever happened.
Wow. So, I mean, set the stage. Could you explain for those who, you know, haven't been to a production at the University of Memphis yet, or particularly this production, how big is the cast? What can people expect as far as the staging and the just the atmosphere, the environment that they're walking into?
Feel free to cut me off anytime with this, Andrew, because I could go on about this. We have an 8-person cast full of really wonderful performers here at the University of Memphis. We have Solon Rochelle, Andre Hill, Lily Anderson, Chandler Van Hoke, Aaliyah Green, Victoria Black, Aiden Saunders, and Kate Jett, a freshman amongst a sea of upperclassmen who's, you know, I'm highlighting him right now in particular because it just shows that we've been able to accumulate a very diverse cast in terms of experience and also in terms of like discipline and, you know, just general walks of life as well. And it's made the process, for one, a lot more enjoyable in that regard, just because it's, you get a bunch of different people and a bunch of different ideas and kind of throwing it together. And I like to imagine we've crafted a pretty unique aesthetic whenever it comes to this production, The Mousetrap. Our lighting designer, Anthony Pelecchia, when him and I were talking in the initial stages, we came up with the idea of like, well, you know, it's a English play and we're presenting it for an American audience, and American audiences love noir detective. We love those noir detective stories that are very like reminiscent of the time The Mousetrap is set in. And so we were like, well, what if we just went with these like the noir style lighting, you know, these sharp shadows and silhouettes and things like that. And we've created a very AP's done a tremendous job at creating a world that is both shadowy and obscure, but completely visible for the audience. So you're never having to like wonder like, oh, can I like, who is this person? I can barely see them or anything like that. It's completely like, he's done a tremendous job of being able to illuminate the stage while also keeping our shadows and keeping that sort of noir type of feeling with the lights and all of that aspects. And our scenic designer, David Shank, has created this tremendous box set, which is just a fancy way of saying a 3-wall room. And it feels truly lived. It feels like a place that people have lived in for generations at this point, with like eclectic furniture, wall decorations. Like, the people that working on the set have put in a tremendous amount of work into making it feel lived and making it feel lifelike. And the sound that our sound designer Bruce Moran has created, it's gotten a lot of subtlety to it to kind of balance out the very prominent aspects of lighting and scenic, where the sound is sort of like this lingering force in the background with little subtle creaks of the clock and the crackling of the fireplace, footsteps from off stage, and all sorts of other little smaller but very large aspects of sound that create this feeling of either like paranoia or uncertainty. And it just really sort of enhances the storytelling we're going for. And it's been really exciting seeing all the elements kind of come together to create a vision and a production that feels pretty, hopefully pretty unique compared to a lot of other previous productions of Mousetrap that have been put on all across the globe. So that's one of the challenges I think we've kind of, that I was trying to address whenever leading this production, was how do we make something that's so famous and so well known something unique for this city and this university? How can we put our own stamp on it while still keeping it like genuine and true to what the script is? And I think we've done a pretty solid job of putting our own stamp on it while also staying true.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have to applaud you, because you know, the people who are listening, they can't see you. You don't have a sheet of paper. You're rattling off those names. You're in it. I mean, you got all of those cast members. You started running down the other people behind the scenes. I mean, that's incredible. I have a hard time remembering what I ate for breakfast. So that's good.
Well, thank you. It's really easy to remember all the names whenever you've worked on this. Whenever, like, we've, since working on this production for so long now, we've been going at it since October, I think, is when we started our initial design meetings and whatnot. And we've been having rehearsals since November. So it's been a lot of time spent with the people on this production. And it's sometimes it's a challenge being around people for so long and not having friction just sort of arise, just because you're working so closely with the same people over and over again, you know, long hours, lots of stress and all of the above. But everyone has managed to maintain really like cool heads about everything, and everyone's made the process super easy and super streamlined to work with. So it makes it a heck of a lot easier to give credit and remember people off the top of the dome whenever they've just been so pleasant and good to work with, as not only artists but also as people.
Fantastic. So this production of Mousetrap by Agatha Christie will be going on Thursday through Saturday, February 20th through through the 22nd at 7:30 on those days, and Saturday and Sunday, I'm assuming that's a matinee performance.
Yes, sir.
The 22nd and the 23rd at 2 p.m. We're going to get back to it with Tyler in a bit, but here's a little bit of Gerard Harrison dialogue with Ohaji's Wish. listening to the University of Memphis Hour. You got JB here. You got Tyler here. We're just hanging out. Oh, I'm sorry. We got Pastor Ship, too. Pastor Ship's hanging out. A wonderful sight for Tuesday morning. Hopefully you're riding around and doing whatever it is you do on Tuesday morning. I like to do this. Tyler, you feeling good still?
Feeling real good. Feeling real good. Just for the listeners at home who aren't familiar with Pastor Ship, this man is freshly 86 years old and was outpacing me when leading me around the concourse this morning. So he is a lot younger than his age lets on, which very similar to one of the characters in the show, actually.
Really? Well, enlighten me, please.
Well, one of the characters we have in the show is a man by the name of Mr. Paravicini, and he is a rather, not obscure, but a mysterious sort of figure that shows up in the middle, after all the other guests have arrived at Monkswell Manor, which is where this play is set. And he is a man of mystery and man of very particular means, we'll say, in terms of how he gets his money. And he does himself up to appear to look older, which stands out very oddly compared to the rest of the characters, who a lot of them are trying to make themselves look younger despite looking older. So Paravicini is able to move around quite fluidly and quite easily compared to a lot of our other characters despite his age. And I'm just kind of thinking about how Pastor Ship mainly reminds me a little bit about Paravicini in terms of how well he's able to get around.
Well, we could call him Pastor Paravicini.
Oh, we can. Okay.
Maybe just today. We'll try it out and see if it sticks.
That's how I'm going to remember it from now on.
All right,
that's
that'll work. Sure. Well, then we have to make sure that Pastor Ship comes to see The Mousetrap by Agatha Christie at the University of Memphis. There's going to be two separate slates of performances, Thursday through Saturday, February 20th through the 22nd at 7:30 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday a matinee, February 22nd and 23rd at 2 p.m. A mystery. Pastor Ship, do you like a good mystery?
Oh yes.
All right. I was down at the I'm losing the name. Is it the Muse Museum over there by the Ben Hooks Library? It's kind of like a collection of smaller escape rooms.
Oh, okay.
But there were a lot of mysteries we had to solve the other day.
Well, we got a big one, arguably the biggest type of mystery of all, a murder mystery.
That's right.
That remains to be solved starting Thursday and ending Sunday. Another fun tradition about this prestigious show is the fact that it's gone on for so long is that it's kind of hard to contain a mystery for however many years consecutively that's been going on since 1952. But one thing that I would like to encourage any potential audience members for this upcoming weekend is that once you see the show, please preserve the mystery of the whodunit. That is very, very essential for this theater experience. And also a part of theatrical tradition with this production all the way back since its genesis in the West End. So I highly encourage everyone to please maintain a little bit of secrecy, as hard as it might be once you see the show, to not give it away for any friends and family that may be coming to see it after you.
And we know that a whole lot of friends and family are going to want to see it. You can rave about it if you like it.
Oh,
if you
definitely
love it, you enjoy it. But hold on to the mystery.
Yes, for
Leave
sure.
Let it be fun for everyone
for
else.
Sure.
I don't want you to give too much away, but I take it there are a lot of themes that are explored in this piece. Are there any that are central that you can tell us without giving away too much of the plot?
Oh, for sure. One theme that I it's more of a secondary theme, but one theme I find really interesting about this play is that there's a secondary theme of older generation versus newer generation that goes on in it as well, because we have quite a few characters that are older than our house owners and some of the other guests in the house as well. And there's a culture clash when it comes to values and decorum from the older generation versus the newer generation. And it's something that it's fairly prominent, especially when you're looking out for the text, whenever you're reading it and dissecting it. But I want to highlight that in particular because I feel like it's something that can get kind of overlooked a little bit whenever the mystery is so prominent, and that being sort of our central action that carries us through the whole show, is that there's also a little bit of dissection of old previous generation versus the current generation, because around the time this was written, Britain and the rest of the world at large would have still been recovering from World War II after the fallout of that.
True.
So there's still a little bit of a, there's not very large political themes, especially ones pertaining to World War II, but for anyone that is a history buff that would potentially be viewing the show, there's a lot of little nods and winks to the conditions of the United Kingdom following post-World War II, and the way the generations in the show kind of grapple with those circumstances is a fairly prominent secondary theme that goes on in the show, and it's something that I quite like. We also, of course, with the murder mystery, there's a theme of disbelief, a theme of paranoia going on. You know, once people all get settled in the house, they're not quite sure, like, who did what and who people really are, because there's people done up trying to make themselves either look older or younger than they appear, people with mysterious past, and people trying to hide their own past, and it creates a lot of confusion and mistrust amongst the characters, and that is another thing that really sort of helps elevate this mystery to a more suspenseful level, is the fact that you're not really quite sure what's true and what's not true when it comes to these characters and their past. And I think the audience will have a fun time trying to decipher what's real and what's not real about these characters as they're along for the ride of the play.
You touched on something that I found pretty interesting, that push and pull between the generations.
Yeah.
It seems like something rarely poignant and timely, you know, in the culture of okay boomer and okay millennial and yeah, okay Gen Z or Gen X or whatever comes after that. I mean, there's a lot of conversations about that gap, that culture gap between generations today. It's interesting that theme still holds up in this piece, which is from, you said, 1952, correct?
Yeah. One of our, arguably, who I think is the biggest, what character is the biggest driver of this conversation is one of the characters, Mrs. Boyle, who is played by one of our performance majors in the department, Victoria Black. And Mrs. Boyle is, as soon as she gets into the home, she's just already unsatisfied with what she sees, because it is a house that is just started up as essentially a bed and breakfast guest house type of establishment. And the owners, the Ralstons, Molly Ralston and Giles Ralston, played by Sulan Rochelle and Andre Hill respectively, they're very new and inexperienced young couple trying to run this guest house. And Mrs. Boyle is this older woman who is used to a certain level of panache and extravagance and decorum that was commonplace in the older generation that this young couple just doesn't seem to have. And Mrs. Boyle, one of the first remarks she makes to Molly when she sees her is, instead of hello or how do you do, she just immediately comments that you are very young to be running a guest house and very inexperienced. So Mrs. Boyle is very quick to point out that the younger people in the current state of Great Britain is not the way she remembers it being when, you know, she would have been a younger woman at the height of her career as a magistrate and living through the height of England prior to World War II and its devastation of the country as well. So she's one of our bigger characters that drives that theme of old generation versus new generation. And I really like the touch you made about how we are living in a okay boomer, okay millennial type of cultural divide right now. And I think that's something that a lot of people will be able to sort of read into with this piece as well. But it's not also necessarily supposed to be a huge like political dissection as well. If anything, I think it'll hopefully be a moment where, you know, older members of the family and younger members of the family, whenever they're watching the show, they can kind of see how Boyle and Molly interact and have a good laugh at it, at the ridiculousness of how she's so quick to judge Boyle is so quick to judge Molly for just starting to run a guest house, and you're not going to know how to do everything right the first time. So it, you know, it takes experience and whatnot to get that skill set down. And I think hopefully maybe that'll cause a little bit of tension relief between any sort of like older or newer generations, just by being able to see how silly it is to be so quick to judge someone older or younger than you just based off appearance. So hopefully that'll be a effect of our play.
Yeah, I can think of several instances in my life where either side of that coin has applied.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Fantastic. We're looking forward to The Mousetrap by Agatha Christie with Tyler and your colleagues and students, correct, that are putting this on. I don't know how the hierarchy yes, work. You're still working on your MFA, right?
Yes, sir. The way it's – we have a very eclectic bunch across the department. We have graduate students working as a stage manager, scenic designer, and sound designer. We have a faculty member as our lighting designer. We have undergraduates as our costumes designer, and all of our cast members are undergraduates as well. So it's really nice being able to not only learn from like the people older than you, like my advisor John York and our lighting designer Anthony Pelecchia, both faculty members, and they've been tremendous to learn under and, you know, just be able to gain knowledge about the craft from their experience and from their perspective. But you also get to see, you know, younger theater artists that are a little bit newer to the theater game in terms of experience when compared to the grad students, and being able to mentor them and help them get better at their craft, get better at their acting. And then also being able to get ideas from them as well, new perspectives on how to approach staging, new perspectives on the characters that they bring that I never would be able to make the connections to. And it's created a really good environment for, I think, at least for me, to learn from all sorts of people from all sorts of varying levels of experience in, as terms of theater people and theater artists. So it's another thing that's a really great aspect of the theater department here at the University of Memphis, is the fact you get to work with such a wide range of people and varying disciplines and varying experiences, whether it be faculty, your fellow grad students, or your undergrad students. All of you guys have a equal footing whenever it comes to producing a production and your various sorts of your responsibilities and your positions that you take the mantle for. It creates a nice little level playing field where everyone is equal regardless of how that dynamic may be, like in the classroom or outside of the rehearsal space.
Absolutely. The Mousetrap by Agatha Christie coming up Thursday through Saturday, February 20th through the 22nd, 7:30 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday, February 22nd through the 23rd at 2 p.m. Here's some music from Diana Sarah. This is called Touch.
Face to face. Ain't no switch up in me trying to say you're my forever and always. You're my sweet thing, baby, always. Got your left, your right, your back and your front. Baby, we down for life. Said that's just how we ride.
something like a little music on Tuesday. We lost Pastor Ship.
I don't know where he went to. It was very good to meet him. He's a very pleasant man. Yeah. I like him.
He's a dynamo, I'd say.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it, too.
Well, Tyler, it's been fantastic having you here to talk about the Mousetrap, but I'd love to hear more about you. Tell me, I mean, what are some of the other productions you've been a part of since you've been here in town, and some of the other things that you've done?
Oh, for sure. Whenever I first got into town last year to begin, I directed what they call at the university a lunchbox production, which is just a production that has no technical support, no budget, and it's just you, a few actors, and whatever you can find for about 45 minutes to an hour, put something up for everyone to see. And it was a production of The Dumb Waiter by Harold Pinter, which is technically it's labeled a comedy of menace, but I know to a lot of theater people that just doesn't really mean anything, which is just basically, to put it in a more simple and contemporary terms, it's like a very odd, dark comedy. Okay. Is essentially what it is. And we did that, and I think it went over pretty well for the most part. I had one of the actors in that is one of the leads in The Mousetrap, Andre Hill. So it's been great being able to work with him multiple times. I think he's a phenomenal actor and someone who works really, really hard at his craft. And after that was over, I assistant directed University of Memphis's production of Into the Woods, which was directed by a now graduated grad directing student, Patrick Polson, who in a lot of ways I consider him to be one of my biggest mentors, because he really like took the time to not only show me how to navigate directing as a grad student, but also how to navigate grad school itself, how to navigate, you know, living in Memphis as like a, you know, new resident, and just gave me a lot of great advice on how to navigate theater and how to approach theater. And learning alongside him for Into the Woods was a really valuable experience. And plus, the show itself was awesome. Like, I don't know how many people listening got to see Into the Woods, but I hope it was so many, because it was such a great show to watch. Sondheim is Sondheim for a reason. So it's like, Into the Woods is a really great theater experience for anyone to go and see, especially if you can see it in your local community, in your city, any sort of production going on about anything Sondheim, I think is definitely worthwhile to go see. In addition to going to see The Mousetrap at the University of Memphis this upcoming weekend. So there's not been a ton of experience outside of the university that I've had down here in the city. Most of my theater experience outside of university is back home in West Virginia, working with the various professional theaters that exist and thrive up in the Mountain State. So I'm still trying to cement myself as someone who is a upcoming theater professional and burgeoning theater artist in the city. But so far there's such a wealth of great theater that goes on in the city that I was completely like unaware of until moving here. I mean, you have like Theater Memphis, Playhouse on the Square, Hattie Lou, and then the Orpheum's bringing in touring Broadway shows all the time. And there's never a shortage of going to see shows that exist even outside of the university. So it's a really great place if you're someone who likes live theater. And I hope to sort of find a way to wiggle myself into it, especially after graduating and being able to hone my craft a little bit more here at the University of Memphis.
Fantastic. And also a lot to explore outside of theater as well.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so much culture, and we're glad to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. One of my friends in the department, Her name's Rachel Bonner. Shout out to Rachel if you're listening to this. She was actually a part of this this written piece I did called Hills and Hollers. I remember it, which started that my professor and advisor Holly Durr was like, "You talk about West Virginia and Appalachia all the time. That if you don't do like a piece about it before you graduate, I'm going to be very disappointed." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, that's a challenge, and I'm going to take it." And I did it. And Rachel was a part of it. And Rachel is a Memphian native, born and bred, and been here all her life. And her and I spent hours on that production just talking about like the cultural similarities and differences between like the mountains of West Virginia and where she grew up in southern Memphis. And I remember she was at the Civil Rights Museum not too long ago after the production of Hills and Hollers went up, because I was talking to her about how up in Appalachia, whenever they had the mines open up, they would try to pit against miners from a bunch of different ethnic, racial, and social backgrounds, try to pit them against each other so they wouldn't unionize. And she found a display in the Civil Rights Museum that was taken of black miners in West Virginia fighting for unionization. She was like, "I saw this and I thought of you. It made me think of the thing we did and what we were trying to, what, all the stuff we were talking about." And it's really gotten me excited to explore more of the city and see like not only like new experiences and new pieces of culture, but what culture exists here that is similar to the culture back home and culture that, you know, is shared amongst like people from all across the United States. And I'm very, very excited to get to explore the music, the art, the history, and just the life that exists here in Memphis.
Well, it looks like there's been quite a lot for you at the University of Memphis as well. There's always something happening on campus, and the fact that you haven't quite been able to jump out there and explore the city, I think, at least in your experience, speaks to just how much is going on right there within your university community.
Oh, for sure. For sure. We have so many events happening on campus, even just in the theater department alone. Like, as soon as this production of The Mousetrap closes, we're already setting up shop for Most Happy Fella and Emerge, which are our upcoming performances and productions at the University of Memphis. And so it's really easy to just get swept up into what all is happening on campus and all the, you know, various events and organizations that are always hosting something on campus. And I think it's really great being able to be on such a lively campus whenever there's so many events happening that you can just sort of pop out like after class one day and be like, "All right, I'm going to see what's happening." Like, go to the UC and see what's happening, see if there's anyone like doing anything down there, or one of the various like campus organizations that are seemingly always hosting something like every week, every other week. And I know we have the arts festival coming up here soon in the spring as well, which will be tremendous opportunity, especially for our theater students to show off their skill set and meet other artists and get to just demonstrate and showcase the value of the University of Memphis community, especially the arts side of the University of Memphis community. And it's really exciting being down here and being able to be a part of so many things in such a quick succession.
Well, it's been fantastic having you. Wishing the best with The Mousetrap coming up by Agatha Christie, Thursday through Saturday, February 20th through the 22nd at 7:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, a little matinee, February 22nd and the 23rd at 2 p.m. Tyler, best of luck with this production. We'll break a leg, rather, as they say in your business. And thanks for coming by to be on the University of Memphis Hour.
Of course. Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me. Very much appreciate it.
Cheers. Thank you.
when I first looked in your eyes, I saw forever, and what a surprise. I said to my Lord, could this be real? Something so precious could be just for me. Love, oh love, I finally found love, and you, oh you, believe me, it's true. I promise forever with you. I
when I first knew it was love, I had to be sure it was.
I'm so glad.